Morning. Today's Daf and Temura is Daf Vav. We are starting today on Hamad Beis, and we are on day two of one of the highlight sugyas in the Masechta, and that is Machlokes between Abaye and Rava. Machlokes Abaye and Rava deals with the very conceptual issue of when the Torah issues a lav, and it issues a negative prohibition. So is the Torah saying that you shouldn't do it, or that the Torah is saying you can't do it? Now, let's be clear. The law in the Torah is something that is prohibited, and by prohibition, that means, of course, is that we are not allowed to do so. What we're really discussing is the efficacy of the act. If, in fact, when the Torah gives us a law, does that mean that the Torah says that we not only are prohibited from doing so, but it won't be efficacious at all? The act will just simply have no bearing whatsoever, won't have any status, because the Torah says not to do so. That is the opinion of Rava. If the Torah says not to do something, im avid lo mahani. So if you do it, it's not going to be efficacious. So that is Rava's position. Abaye on the other side of this issue. Abaye says no. Abaye says that when, in fact, the Torah gives us a prohibition, it means that we are, of course, prohibited from doing it. But if we use our Bechir Chavshis and opt to violate the Avera, so then the act will, in fact, be efficacious. That's a very, very big machlokas between Abaye and Rava in terms of how to fundamentally look at a lav. A corollary issue, which the Gemara also brings up as well, as we learned in yesterday's daf, is the question of Malkus. Why is it that the Torah imposes Malkus? So according to Rava, the Torah imposes Malkus for not violating the law, although that's what you did, but for attempting to violate the law. Because the act that you do is not going to be efficacious, but nevertheless, you attempted to violate the law, so therefore, according to Rav, the Malkus that you're receiving is for the attempt in violating the law. Abaye, on the other hand, goes in the other direction. Abaye says that the Malkus that you're given is for not just attempting to violate the law, but for successfully violating the law. And so this is really a major divide between Rav and Abaye in terms of how to look at a law. This discussion, which we started with yesterday, we got through half of it yesterday in Daf Hey, and so the other half comes up in Daf Vav today. Now, it is an unbelievable machlokas, and it really, when you think about it, you could spend a long time thinking about the machlokas, hammering out the details, which we did yesterday, and we're going to do more of today. When all said and done, what are we going to end up with in terms of practical differences between Abaye and Rav? It's good that you asked that question, or at least I asked that question. It happens to be the Gemara is going to ask that question, and you'll see that the difference between them is going to be small. It may be nothing. It may be that there's no difference between them. Now, as we already saw in yesterday's daf, Abaye and Rava, when challenged with numerous topics that we discussed, a person is megarish, he divorces a woman that he was ma'anes, and the Torah tells him that he must marry her. The Torah tells us that he cannot divorce her. So, and many other topics that we discussed yesterday as well, being mafresh truma from the inferior quality onto the superior quality, being mafresh truma from one min onto another min, being po decher me kohanim, just going over the list of topics that we talked about yesterday. Tumura, trying to exchange one carbon for another. The redemption of a bechor. The redemption of maisa behema. Still from yesterday. Removing of hafreshes trumas or maisers out of order. And being makdish truma to bikurim. So in all these, the marriage of a kohen gadol to an almana. So all these topics that we discussed yesterday, and by the way, I just listed off the topics that we did yesterday in order. Okay, good. That's 1 point for me, but that's just 1 point. So so all these topics that we covered yesterday, so these are topics where even though Abaye and Rava are divided on this very fundamental issue, but as we learned in yesterday's daf, but they're all going to agree on all these topics. Why? Because even though the conclusion is, and by the way, the conclusion for some of them is Mahani, and the conclusion for some of them is Lo Mahani. But nevertheless, so as each one of them pointed out, it's going to be exceptional, meaning that it may go against my general Shita, but the Torah over here outlines that this is going to be an exception to the rule. And each Amora does that for each of the cases that goes against his respective position. Okay, so this is the Gemara that we did yesterday, and we're going to be continuing along the same line of discussion, same line of thinking. Mind you, by the way, as I pointed this out yesterday, their machlokas is not going to be as grand as it is, although it already is incredibly grand, because consider that there are many averes in the Torah where there could possibly be no debate whatsoever. that what you did is effective. The Torah says, lo sirtzach, don't kill, and meanwhile you kill somebody, hard to say, really hard to say, that your action was ineffective. Your action was clearly effective. The discussion over here is limited to discussions in which what you're trying to do with your action is give something a status. So when you give something a status through your action, so this is a machlok between Rav and Abaye. So again, Rav says, lo mahani, Abaye says mahani, and so let's just pick it up right where we left off yesterday. We are on Hamad Beis, and we're going to be starting with Vaharei. It's about six lines from the bottom of the Amud. Vaharei hikdash bala mumma mizbeach. Let's say you do the following. I take an animal with a blemish, and I makdash it as a carbon. Now, obviously, I can't offer it as a carbon. That goes without saying. An animal with a mum, an animal with a physical blemish, is disqualified to be brought as a carbon. That's basic. We learned that extensively back in Zvachos. Back in Bechoros, we discussed what exactly represents a physical blemish in an animal. So you're not allowed to be makdish such an animal. Sorry. You're not allowed to be mocker of such an animal. What about being makdish the animal? What about consecrating it and trying to give it a kedusha segos? So the Torah says don't do so. How do I know the Torah says don't do so? So let's see the Gemara. We're going to pick it up right where we left off. So the Torah says, and anything that has a blemish, lo sakrivu. Now, I know the word lo sakrivu means don't offer it, but as we're going to learn a little bit later this morning, it actually means don't consecrate it. Okay, we'll see that later on this morning. Anyway, so there's an issur of being makdish abal mum. Utsanana makdish abal mum legabe mizbech afa pishuhu below sase masha aso asui. And meanwhile, the Braisa tells us that if I do so, so you will in fact give status to the animal will now be considered a carbon. Now, I say carbon, by the way, obviously it's DQ'd, it's a disqualified carbon, but nevertheless, though, you have imbued it with kedushas haguf. Now, it's a kedushas haguf animal with a bal mum, so that means that you're going to be podet, but still, you violate the Torah, and your action was effective. To Yufta de Rava, obviously, this serves as a question against Rava. Amalacha Rava, Shani Hausa, Mamakro, Lenedo lo Yiratse. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Rava will tell you it's an exception. It's an exception to my general rule because the Pasuk says, Ulenedo lo Yiratse, Ritzuhu de la Maratse, Hamikdash Kache. So the Gemara says that what it's not going to affect is Ritzui, but it's going to be at least Mekudash. In other words, you can't offer it as a carbon, but nevertheless, though, it's going to be infused with Kedusha as a carbon. Now, according to Abaye, so why do I need the pasuk? Remember, you have to account for each position. Abaye's baseline position is that even though the Torah says not to do it, if I do it, it will be effective. I don't need a special drasha, according to Abaye, to tell me that I have in fact infused the carbon with a kedusha. I know that already. So why do I need this extra pasuk? So hava mina kovre mitzvah v'chasher kamash malan. So the Gemara over here entertains the Havamina. Quite frankly, it's a difficult Havamina. The Gemara Havamina is that without the Pasuk, I might have thought that according to Abaye, what you could do is you can infuse it with Kedusha's Karban and Kasher. And it's going to be Kasher. Now, this Havamina of the Gemara is really difficult. The animal is a physically blemished animal. It's a Baal Mum. So how can the Gemara, even for a moment, entertain the idea that it's going to be Kasher? So like I said just a moment earlier, it's a difficult Havamina. Okay, so but Kamash Malan, but nevertheless, the Chiddush is that no, it's not going to be a Kasher Karban. Yeah, but that's limited though. That's only by limited balimum. That's only by Dukin Shabayin, and that's only according to the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. So it's a difficult Havamina. What the let's go the other direction. Let's say the animal is a perfect animal, physically not flawed. And I'm not just the animal, but I do sell a vedika bias. Now, this is also going to be an avera. If an animal is qualified to be brought as a carbon, and I decide that I'm not going to give a kedusha as a good, but rather kedusha as damim, so I fell short of its potential. And top of that, there's an avera to do so as well. Now, again, where does the Torah explicitly say that this is an avera? So this is not super clear. Cut the Gemara quotes a pasuk nedava tase oso. So the Torah says that you're going to make it a nedava. It, meaning the Baal Mum, is going to be a nedava towards Bedek Abayis. Now the Mishnah says that you're in violation of a lo sase, it's a negative prohibition. Again, we really haven't clarified how exactly we know that it's a negative prohibition. The pasuk that we quoted, nedavata so, at best tells us that a blemished animal should be offered to Bedek Abayis, should be sanctified for Bedek Abayis. Which implicit in that is that if the animal is not a bal mum, so then you should be offering as a carbon. This is what we call classically a lav haba mechlal aseh. So I only know the negative prohibition based on the inference. The Torah doesn't explicitly say it's a lav. Okay, so we're going to come back to that point a little bit later on. But anyway, the Mishnah tells us very clearly, the Mishnah is right here in Temura, that if I'm not Shmim Lebedek Abayis, Af Apishu B'lo Sase, so I'm in violation of B'lo Sase, Masha Asa Asui. But nevertheless, the act is effective. The consecration is effective. So it's Yufta de Rava, so once again, this serves as a problem towards Rava. So Amalacha Rava, Mimakam Shinis Rabu, Bali Mum, Legami Mizmechnis Rabu, Tamim Lebedek Abayis. So Rava says, look, these two issues are really going hand in hand. They're related issues. Just like we learned that regarding a bamum that I'm makdish as a karban, so masha also asui, and we have a special pasuk to teach us that halacha. Similarly over here, if I take a tamim and I'm makdish a lebedek habayis, that also is masha also asui, even though you shouldn't have done it, but nevertheless it's going to be effective. Okay, v'harei gezel d'rachmana amar lo sigzol. Now what about stealing? The isser of stealing. The Torah says don't steal. Utanan. And meanwhile, the act is effective. What does that mean, the act is effective? It's not effective. You have to return it. So the Gemara over here illustrates it with the following halacha. We know the Gemara Baba Kama tells us, it's the ninth parak of the Masechta, that if I steal something and then I invoke a change in the item, I make a shinui, a physical change in the item. So what I've done now is I've acquired the item. The item now belongs to me. Obviously, I still have to make restitution on the value of the item that I stole, but the item belongs to me. So you see over here that there's a certain effectiveness in that which you have done. Now, over here, mind you, by the way, this one is a little bit tricky because this one over here, I actually put a physical change in the item. I didn't put a status change in the item, not what we've been discussing previously. So over here, how does this fit really into this discussion? So you'll say something along these lines. Consider the following. If I go into your house and I make a physical change in your house, so you know what that's called? That's called hezek. That's called damages. And obviously, under those circumstances, I have not acquired the item, and not only that, but I have to pay for the damages in which I did. So what's the difference whether I go into your house and I break something, or I steal something and I break something? So it must be that it has to be that the only difference between the two cases is the act of theft. So that means to say that the act of theft somehow is now registered. It gives now a new status to the item. It now allows me to, I mean, I'm not allowed to do any of this. I mean, I can't steal, and I certainly shouldn't be changing the item after I stole it. But it allows me now at least the ability to give the status change to the item so that when I, in fact, make a change in the item now belongs to me. So you see over here that even though I went against the Torah, I stole, and then I made a physical change in the item. Nevertheless, Masha also asked me, what's done is done. So you have to the Rava. So again, this becomes now a problem for Rava. So Amlecha Rava Shani Hasam Damakra Asher Gazal Kamasha Gazal. So Rava's response to that is Asher Gazal. The Torah gives us extra verbiage, and this tells us that the only time that I have to return the item is only when the item is in its original state. But once the item has been changed to another form, so then I no longer have to return it in its new changed state. In other words, according to Rava, exception. Pasuk tells us that this is going to violate his general rule. Now we have to go back in the other direction. What about Abaye? I don't need these words according to Abaye. According to Abaye, the baseline is it's effective. So Ula Abaye Hai Asher Gazami Baile Al Gzelo Shalom Mosif Chomish Al Gzelo Shal Aviv Eino Mosif Chomish. So for Abaye, we need the pasuk of Asher Gazal to teach me a different halacha. Let's say I steal an item, and the owner comes over and accuses me of having his item. And I say to him, don't know what you're talking about. Don't have the item. Really? Would you swear on that? And I go to court and I swear on it. So the halach is as follows, is that if I swear on something that I stole and I lied under oath and said that I didn't steal it, so under those circumstances, not only do I have to pay back its original value, but I also have to pay back chomish as well. So this idea of paying back chomish is only for an item in which I stole. However, if it's an item, let's say that my father stole, and I swore to the fact that I didn't owe it, so under those circumstances, I don't pay chumash. So that's why I need the pesukim according to Abaye. The Gemara doesn't go over the back and forth. What, Rava, how does he know this halacha? The Gemara doesn't go over that point, but anyway, so good. So we have now tackled the issue of gzela. Hari mashkon. The Gemara says, okay, what about taking collateral? Now the Torah says very clearly that you can't go and collect collateral. Now, it's not that we are against the institution of collateral as an idea. Collateral as an idea is totally fair, but you cannot, as a private individual, go into somebody's house and take the person's collateral. If the person is being difficult and he's defaulting on his payment. So then what you can do is you can take him to Beis Din. If the person's still obstinate, so Beis Din can go into his house and Beis Din can take a piece of collateral. But you yourself cannot go in there and take collateral. The pasuk says that lo sevo beis olavod avatov v'tanan machzir sakar b'layla v'esam achareisha b'yom. And meanwhile, the Mishnah tells us that if in fact you go in and you take collateral, despite the fact that the Torah told you not to do that, nevertheless, what is this item going to be treated like? It's going to be treated like collateral. Now we know regarding certain collaterals, when you take collateral from somebody, so on one hand, it does secure the loan and it does incentivize them to pay you back. On the other hand, however, you can't hold on to it all the time. Let's say the individual is really poor and what you took as collateral was a pillow. So that means that every night before you go to bed, before you go to bed, before he goes to bed, so you have to return the pillow to him at night. Let's say what you took as collateral is his plow. So during the daytime, you have to give him back his plow so that he can work.
That's and before the loan start gets off the ground.
No, huh?
You're talking about taking his going to his house and taking collateral.
Correct, agreed.
Oh, I see. He designated as collateral in his house, you said.
You designate it as collateral. You want your money back. So you say, I'll take this as collateral. Now, you didn't have the right to do that, but nevertheless, what's done is done. So to yufta de Rava. So this obviously serves as a difficulty for Rava. So amlecha Rava shani asma makra shev tashiv. So Rava will tell you, look, I agree that in this particular circumstance, it's different. I normally say masha asui eno asui, right? I avid lo mahani. And I normally would have told you that the status does not have collateral, but the pasuk says hashev tashiv, the double language. What's the double language coming to tell me? That even in this circumstance where you took it and you took it illicitly, you did not have the right to go in and take it yourself. So under these circumstances, still, it's going to have the status of collateral. Pasuk hashev tashiv. Ula Abaye. Now let's go the other direction. Now according to Abaye. So according to Abaye, I need the pasuk of Hashiv Tashiv to tell me the following. Look, you shouldn't have gone in there, you shouldn't have taken collateral. Okay. But once you did, once you've done so under those circumstances, one could entertain the idea that, okay, so you know what, I took it, and now I'm going to hold on to it. In other words, he owes me the money, and I'm going to hold on to it. Hashiv Tashiv comes to tell me that even in such a circumstance, I still have to follow the rules of collateral, the general rules of collateral, and that's it. That is, if he needs it at night, I got to return it to him at night. If he needs it during the day, I return it to him during the day.
So it's allowed to need to declare,
that's what it is. Something along those lines. It's the, in other words, it still has a status of a mashkon. V'arepeya derachmana amar lo sechala patzadecha. Now, ubekutzrecha lo selakeh. Anyway, v'tanan. So let's now turn our attention to the mitzvah of peya. You have a field, so you must designate a corner of that field over to the aniyim. One of the matnos aniyim, one of the gifts to the poor, is that you leave a corner of the field to the poor so that he can collect from that corner. V'tanan mitzvah peya lahafrish menakama. Now, primarily, what's the mitzvah? Is that as the wheat is growing in the fields, so you are to leave that wheat growing in the field over for the ani. Let him collect, let him harvest. That's the primary mitzvah. Lo hifrish menakama, yafrish menamarim. Now, let's say that you harvested it. Okay, so you are right now not in a primary state of doing the mitzvah, but still it's not too late. In other words, even though you harvested the whole field, okay, so just simply give a corner of what you harvested over to the aniyim. Let him take a corner of that. Now, I say corner over here, I really mean a fraction, meaning a portion, right? There's no amount to how much you have to give over to the aniyim in terms of peya. First Mishnah and peya, my bekias and peya is not good, but the Mishnah says, Elu Dvarim Shein Lam Shir. There are certain things that don't have an amount, peya being one of them. So anyway, so fine. So you harvested the field, so you got to leave him some of that which you harvested. Lo hifrish men amar, yafrish men akari. So let's say now you harvested and you went one step further. And now you actually collected all the grains and you put it into a pile. And you haven't yet offered peya to the aniyim. Again, it's not too late. So you could take now from the grains that you have now collected from the sheaves, and you can leave a portion of that to the aniyim. Adche lo mirchu. Now, even before you smoothed off the top of the pile, what's so significant about smoothing off the top of the pile? So we discussed this time and again. When you smooth off the top of the pile, now this pile of grain is what's called status-wise tevel, and now you have the obligation to take off chumas and maestros. So now what happens is that you have been you have been negligent of taking off peah, and you now went through the process of harvesting and taking the grains and going through the whole process. And not only that, but you made it into a pile and you smooth the top of the pile so you know exactly how much you have. And now there's a chiyuv of Trumas HaMaisos, so it's still not too late. But Achelo Mirchu, Mirchu, once you are Miruach, once you smooth off the top of the pile, so Me'asro, so now you take off Trumas HaMaisos, Venosinlo, and now you're going to take off Peah. In other words, you first have to take off your obligation of Trumas HaMaisos, and then you take Peah off and give it to the Aniyim. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amr Af Mafresh Mina'isa. And now Rabbi Shmuel goes one step further. Let's say that you've been negligent not only to the point where you're Meruch HaSakri, but to the point where you now ground up the wheat, you've now added it to water, otherwise known as you made a dough. Under those circumstances, it's still not too late, says Rabbi Shmuel, even though consider at this point in time, think of the shinuim that we're talking about, the radical change that we made, that we are here from the time that it was out in the field, growing as wheat in the field. And nevertheless, you're still going to be chayiv and giving off peah. So even though what you did was made significant shinuim in the item, nevertheless, you still have a requirement to take off peah. Now, this is going to be problematic to which position. I mean, the Gemara says, so I don't have to think too hard. But if we could just think about it for a moment, this is going to be problematic to Abaye. Because Abaye says what's done is done. Meaning you did either willfully or not willfully, whichever way, but what you have done is that you have evaded the giving of peah to the point now where it's totally a different item. You've been mishana the item. Moments earlier in the Gemara this morning, we learned how by Gezel, if I invoke a shinu in an item, so the item now becomes mine. So obviously I have to pay back its value, but the item becomes mine. So why can't I make a similar argument over here? Masha asu, what's done is done. So to yufta da'abai, am l'chabai, shani hasam da'amakra, azov ta'azov. I'm sorry, ta'azov ta'azov yisera. So when the Torah in Parshas Kedoshim introduces us to the idea of peah, so the Torah says you leave it to the anim and it repeats and you leave it to the anim. That repetition, ta'azov ta'azov, comes to tell me that even though normally, if I didn't leave it for the aniyim and I collected it for myself and I even turned it into dough, nevertheless, tazov, the second tazov comes to reinforce, I still have to give it to the aniyim, and so therefore this is an exception to the rule. And this now is going to fall into the category of, I still have to do so. The status has not changed even though I violated the iser. V'rav am l'cha yeshecha ziv acher shekazu. Now let's turn to Rava's attention. Let's turn our attention to Rava. Rava doesn't need the extra pasuk. Rava, because according to Rava, even though you attempted to make a status change, even though you violated the Torah, nevertheless, lo mahani, it wasn't successful. So from Rava, the baseline is going to be that I have to give it to the aniyim. I don't need the extra tazov. So what is Rava going to do with the extra tazov? To teach me the following halacha. That in other circumstance, in a similar circumstance, so you have to make sure you have to give the matanos. Shekazu ve'ezezu amafkir kamo. Let's say the following circumstance. Let's say, night before you go to bed, so you officially are mafkir, you declare ownerless all the grapes in your field. Now declaring it ownerless means what? Means that you now disavow yourself of owning those grapes. Anyone who wants to can come and take it. Now, what do you benefit from that? Well, we'll see in just a moment what you benefit from that. Now, if you made this public information, and generally speaking, when being mafkir something, so you need to make it public. A hefkeris generally has to be done in front of three. A debatable point, but hefkeris has to be done in front of three, so you made it public. So that means that what you should be expecting the next day is a whole group of people coming over to your field because, hey, you know, it's not a garage sale, it's an open house, open field, anyone could take. Okay, good. And what else do you, so what do you gain in doing so? When something now is hefker, so there's no chiyuv of Trumas HaMaisros. Trumas HaMaisros is only a chiyuv, a hafresh of Trumas HaMaisros is only going to be obligated under the circumstances where there's an owner. Once there's no longer an owner, there's no longer a chiyuv of Trumas HaMaisros. Oh. So here now, unfortunately, this person is very calculated. So he was mafker the field the night right before he went to bed. Next morning, wakes up super early, and he goes out to the field and he collects all the grapes that he was mafkir. Now, I know it sounds like he is trying to just simply evade taxes. It doesn't sound that way. It is that way, meaning that's exactly his intent over here. D'tanya, mafkir kamo v'ishkim l'shachar b'tzro chaya b'per v'olos b'shichol v'peya u'pata min ha'maiser. So over here, if he in fact does this, so he is going to be obligated in all the matanos anim, he's going to be exempt from maiser. The exemption from maiser, as I already explained, because it's ownerless. He's reclaiming it, okay, but he's reclaiming it from Hefker. So in terms of the p'tur of Meiser, so that I explained, what about the chiyuv of Matanos Aniyim? How come he's going to be chayv in Matanos Aniyim? That extra tazov. That extra tazov comes to tell me that under these circumstances, so even though he has declared it hefker, and even though he has reacquired it, that extra tazov comes to tell me that he must leave for the Aniyim. Amalei Rav Acha b'rei de Ravela Rav Ashi v'asha d'shanin kolhani shinuyei. So the Gemara now takes a moment to breathe and to pause. So I'm going to do the same. So now what we have done since yesterday is gone over numerous different examples throughout the Gemara, throughout Halacha, in terms of which position seems to fit better. The answer is, depends. Some mitzvos seem to side with Rava, some mitzvos in Halacha seem to side with Abaye. And as you have seen over the course of the last daf and a half, since the bottom of Dalam and Beis, what the Gemara has done is said that according to Abaye, all the cases that don't conform to his position are exceptions to the rule. Rava does the same. All the halachic examples that don't conform to his position are going to be exceptions to his rule. But when all is said and done, so we have really alignment between Abaye and Rava. So the machlokas conceptually is a tremendous divide. But practically speaking, what do we have right now? And what we have right now is nothing. We have no practical difference between Abaye and Rava. And that's where the Gemara now wants to take a moment, pause, and consider. And so now that we gave all these answers that we've given so far, so what are they going to be arguing about? Is there any point of actual contention and practical difference that separates between Abaye and Rava? So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe the following. Beribis Kitsutsa Kamifligi, maybe they're arguing about interest and Ribis Kitsutsa. So just as a quick introduction, there is two types of interest. There's Ribis Kitsutsa and Ribis She'enu Kitsutsa. What does that mean? The Torah tells us that we're not allowed to charge another Jew interest on a loan. I lend another Jew money, so I'm banned by the Torah, barred by the Torah, not to charge interest. It must be an interest-free loan. The Torah's prohibition is for Ribis Kitsutsa, where the interest is prearranged, meaning before the loan originates. So we're going to agree to terms. I'm going to be charging you 5% interest, 10% interest, right? Look at these rates I'm giving, by the way. I'm practically giving it out free. Yeah. So so if we agree to the terms of interest before the loan originates, so this is what's called ribis kitsutsa. This is what the Torah prohibits. Ribis she'enu kitsutsa is where at the point of origination, I lend them the money with no interest. I wasn't charging any interest. However, at some time during the loan, I decide, you know what? I'm going to charge a little interest. Now, how can you do that in the middle of the loan? Let's say the person wants some sort of extension. Let's say he wants a delay. And you say, look, you want a delay? No problem at all. I just want to charge interest. So that is Ribis She'enu Kitsutsa. Ribis Kitsutsa is Asur Min HaTorah. Ribis She'enu Kitsutsa is Asur Min HaRabbanan. So the Gemara suggests the following. Ribis Kitsutsa Mifligi Yuch Rabbi Uchid Rabbi Elazar Da'amar Rabbi Elazar Ribis Kitsutsa Yotze B'dayanim. So according to Rabbi Elazar, so Ribis Kitsutsa, if you're charging interest and it's prearranged, so it's Yotze B'dayanim. So not only does the borrower not have to pay back the interest, but if the lender went ahead and collected the interest, the borrower now could take the lender to court and say, look, he charged me interest. That was illegal. That was illicit. Torah prohibits it. And the court is now going to go to the lender and take the interest away from him. Now, Avak Ribis, now if it's just Avak Ribis, Avak Ribis, the Avak Ribis is any kind of rabbinic interest. Now, I gave the example of, let's say, an extension mid-loan, where the lender decides that he wants to charge interest. There are other examples of Avak Ribis. If you take a look at Rashi, on the top of the Amud, Rashi gives another example of what would be rabbinic interest. Rashi's example over here would be like this. Let's say I sell you a field and I say, look, you can pay me now and pay me 1,000. You want to wait till after the harvest to pay me? What, a year from now you want to pay me? Fine, I'll charge you 1,200. Okay, so that's Ribis She'enu Kitsutsa. So that is that's a violation of charging interest, but that's not midaraisa, that's midarabanim. So under those circumstances, now let's say I do it and I violate the Isser Darabanan, this is Avak Ribis, Eino Yotza Bidayanim. So according to Rabbi Lazar, I should not have done this as the seller. However, if I do it, and he pays me the 1,200 at the end of the harvest season, so now he can't take me to court. According to Rav Yochanan Amar Afilu Ribis Kitsutsa, Eino Yotza B'Dayanim. Now Rav Yochanan says that neither interest can be collected in court, meaning both of them are Isurim, the Isur Darabanan and the Isur Daraisa are both Isuri, are Isurim. And under both circumstances, Rav Yochanan, if he paid the interest, so he can't come after me and have the courts remove the interest from me. So before we get on to the next point of the Gemara, now the Gemara is considering this is going to be the machlokas between Abai and Rava. Because over here, what did I do? I went against the Torah. And was it effective or was it not effective? So Lechora, Rav Elazar, Rav Yochanan are debating this issue. And the Gemara now is going to create an alignment. This machlokas, Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar, is really predicated on the machlokas of Abai and Rava. According to Rav Elazar, who says that when you charge ribis min haTorah, so now it is extractable in court, so that follows the position of Masha Asui, Enu Asui. I violated the Torah, but it's not going to be effective, and he can take back the ribis. Masha Enkin, according to Rav Yochanan, who says that ribis ketsutza cannot be extracted in court, so he's siding with Abaye, who says Masha Aso Asui. So this is what the Gemara proposes as the machlokas of Abaye and Rava actually seen out in practice, the practical difference between them. Amar Leh, so the Gemara says, look, the machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar is certainly a machlokas, but they are not arguing about the principles of Abaye and Rava. Amar Leh, Hasan Besvar Pligi, Hasan Bekrai Pligi, Damar of Yitzchak. So as far as Abaye and Rava are concerned, so they're arguing in Svara. So they're arguing in terms of the way that they're conceptualizing and looking at an Avera. Right? Masha Asu Asu, Masha Asu Enu Asu. As far as Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar are concerned, they're arguing in terms of the intent of the Psukim, the Pshat in the Psukim. And so therefore, it is these two Machloksim are not linked. So my time of the Amar of Yitzchak, my time of the Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara now is going to start with Rav Yochanan. What is the basis for the sheet of Rav Yochanan that when I charge interest, even if it's ribis ketsutza, so, and the borrower has paid me, he cannot take me to court based on the following drushas. And there are multiple drushas that arrive us to this conclusion. Namakra, b'neshech nasan, v'sarbis, lakach v'chai, lo yichyeh. So, first Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yechezkel. Now, granted, by the way, that we're learning a halacha from the pesukim in Yechezkel, and that, of course, in and of itself is strange, but as we say numerous times, it could be the pasuk in Yechezkel is just reflecting what was the mesorah that was given, and it's just a gilui milsa. It's just a revelatory of what was part of the mesorah. In any event, the Navi Yechezkel is giving tochacha, you're charging interest, v'chai lo yechya, and you're not going to live in doing so. So lechayim nitem lo lishavan. That means that the punishment that comes about through charging interest is simply min hashamayim. Meaning that there is no court down here that can enforce or legislate against this practice. Meaning if the borrower agrees and does in fact pay the interest, so the borrower cannot go to court. In other words, the lender violated Isser, and Achinami violated Isser. In terms of who is going to try him, that's going to be a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu b'chvod v'atzmo is going to try him. Rav Ach bar Adam ha-mehacha v'yireisim alokecha ani Hashem, l'mor nasati v'lo lihi shavon. A similar idea, but here is darshing from the pasuk in Bahar by the pasuk of charging interest. So the pasuk says, "Don't charge interest." Vayareisa me'elokecha ani Hashem, and you have to have yira. And the way Rav Acha bar Ada understands it in explaining the sheet of Rav Yochanan is that in terms of what the impediment is of not charging interest, yiras Hashem, fear of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning no fear of the court, because the court's not going to do anything about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do something about it. So, just give me one more. Rav Amar Mehacha, Toivos, Akel, Asher, Mos Yumas Damav Bo Yiyeh. Another pasuk in Yechezkel speaking to the same idea, that this is an abomination. Mos Yumas Damav Bo Yiyeh. V'holi Ben Parish Shofech Dam. So the pasuk in Yechezkel says that charging interest is like murder. It's tantamount to murder. Now, the Navi Yechezkel is making an equivalency between murder and interest and charging interest. So just like you can't undo murder, so too you can't undo charging interest. Meaning that if the borrower wants to go to court and take the lender to court because the lender collected interest, so just like you can't undo the act of murder, so too you can't undo the act of interest as well. Okay, so three different drashas that all are explanations of Rav Yochanan. It's not a svara, but rather gzeiras hakasuv. It's pesukim. Yeah, Danny.
Aren't both parties liable? In other words, they're both doing.
Yes. 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 We are discussing it from the standpoint of Masha Asu Asui, or Masha Asui and Asui. But yes, you're right. So as far as the sheet of Rav Elazar is concerned, so he goes back to Parshas Bahar. The Torah says that you don't want to charge your brother interest because you want him to live with you. Meaning, you charge him interest, he's going to have a hard time making a living. So, ahadr leki hechi de niche imach. And what the Torah is telling us is that he has to live with you, meaning that if in the event that you charge interest, give back the interest so that he can live with you. So, b'mai kemiflegi abai v'rava b'shinu ikona. So, the Gemara therefore says, okay, so now, Ribbis is now off the table, meaning it is subject to a machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar, but it's not predicated on the machlokas of Abai and Rava. So now, back to square one. So what is going to be a practical difference between Abai and Rava? So the Gemara over here answers very simply with the word Shinu Ikona. Now, Shinu Ikona, what does that mean? So it's not super clear what the Gemara means by that. If I could turn your attention to Rashi. Rashi writes Shinu Ikona, Da Abai is of a Shinu Ishishina. The Avar Aldas Amakam Kona, Bar, Mehecha Dichsive Krai. So the first pshat Rashi offers is as follows. Meaning, shinui over here means basically from the word response, an answer. Meaning, the Gemara's conclusion is, you know what the difference is between Abai and Rava? How I'm going to answer up all the halachas that go against their position. Meaning that when I ask Rava, what about all these cases that don't go and conform with your position? Rava's going to have an answer. When I go to Abai and say, what's your approach going to be in terms of answering all these questions? So Rava's going to tell you, Rava will give you the answers that we've given previously. So that means the way Rashi first presents the Gemara's answer to the question of what's the practical difference between Abai and Rava, so the answer is, there is no practical difference between Abai and Rava. They have a very strong conceptual divide in terms of how to understand the nature of a lav, but practically speaking, it won't actually result in a practical difference. Rashi goes on, "V'lo yisparish lan d'lahavi mi d'bishin b'inayu, el trutz d'hani t'yufta d'mar islay d'mishum d'mahani, v'lo mahani hu, umar islay mishum time of the crime." Okay, so that is one way Rashi offers up the pshat of the Gemara at the conclusion of the discussion. Admittedly, it's really difficult. Meaning, so therefore, we have now spent almost two dapim of Gemara going over a fundamental debate that does not result in a practical difference between the two. Generally speaking, we have a word for that. It's called philosophy. So it's not normal, it's not usual for the Gemara to discuss conceptual differences between them and yet yield no practical difference between them. So admittedly, this first pshat of Rashi within the Gemara is very difficult because basically the Gemara just basically agrees and concludes to the fact that there's no real difference between them. However, Rashi does offer another pshat in the Gemara. V'nichla b'tzira d'matzina l'meimer b'shinu ikona. So maybe what Rashi suggests over here is a different shot in the Gemara's conclusion. And that is that the practical difference is going to be Shinui Kona, right? One of the topics that we discussed over a dozen topics since between yesterday and today. So one of the topics we discussed was Shinui Kona. I steal an item and I make a physical change in the item. Do I acquire the item? So the Gemara proposes that that's the difference between Abai and Rava. Now remember, the Gemara in earlier this morning rejected such a notion based on the extra words in the Pasuk. Even Rava will agree to Abai, Masha Aso Asui. But now, in Rashi's second pshat of our Gemara's conclusion, this could in fact be the difference between Abai and Rava. Kigon, I'm reading the Rashi. Kigon goes, Eitzim v'asam kelim, tzemer v'asam gadam, da Abai kana ve'inu mishalim ela eitzim, v'tzemer, ula Rava lo kana, u mishalim ha'begadam v'hakelim. So this could very well be the difference between Abai and Rava. According to Abai, you want to make a shinui in the item, you have acquired the item, because Masha Asa Asui. And according to Rava, even though you made a change in the item, you have not acquired the item, and you must return the item even in their changed state. V'chi parchinal ela Rava, mehad diktani agozal eitzim v'asam kelim, lo teim ashani hasam dechsev asher gazal. And if this is the correct shot, says Rashi, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to revisit the Gemara that we learned earlier. Meaning, even though the Gemara earlier answered up for Rava, what the Gemara now is saying is, yeah, but that answer is not really an answer. Ela hachitema, anadarmi kamanda amashinu lo kana. So what Rava will tell you is, I side with the position that Shinu is not kona. Depluti hiba babakama beperk meruba, uvegozo kama. This is a debate that takes place in Masechta Babakama, both in the 7th and 9th prakim of the Masechta. Deikala manda amashinu kona, umapik taimim miyashir gazal, kain shagazal. Veikala manda amashinu lo kana. Veyala mevehesha vizagzela mikomakom. And so a machlokus over there in the Gemara, whether shino kona, shino eino kona, and Rashi says that that will in fact now be the machlokus between Abai and Rava. Imke matam lama sher gazal, lama sher eino mosif chamash al gazal aviv. And as far as the extra words, the sher gazal, so Rashi reminds us of, well, we'll darshan it the way we darshaned it earlier, that only the owner pays a fifth in the event that he swears falsely, but the son of the owner will not pay a fifth. Okay, that is Rashi's second possible pshat. At least in Rashi's second possible pshat, now there's going to be a difference, but you know, I speak very carefully. There's only a difference between Abai and Rava, and that is whether or not Shinu Kona, Shinu Eino Kona. This second pshat is very difficult because it puts Rava now on the side of whether Shinu Kona, Shinu Eino Kona. It puts them on the side of Shinu Eino Kona. So that's not the accepted halacha. The accepted halacha in the Gemara Baba Kama is that Shinu Kona. And now you're pitting Rava against the accepted halacha. Generally speaking, we have a machlokes between Abai and Rava. Halacha is like Rava, with six exceptions. And this is not one of the six exceptions. So the second pshat in Rashi, admittedly, is a difficult pshat in the Gemara. So, quite frankly, both pshat in Rashi are very challenging. Because the first pshat tells us that there's no difference between the two of them. And the second pshat says that the difference between them is Shinu Kona. But then it has Rava going against the accepted halacha. Okay. Lishna Achrina, now basically what we're going to do in these next couple of lines of Gemara is we're going to be basically saying the same thing but with different variations, different versions of how we concluded the discussion. Lishna Achrina Bahai Shinuyi Deshanina. So we're going to go back and, meaning, again, the question is, what's the difference between Abai and Rava? And the answer is, well, basically, all the answers that we gave above, espousing why it is that Rava will say that this case is different, or espousing why Abai would say this case is different. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the difference between them is going to be about prearranged interest, like we discussed earlier. So the So the Gemara says, wait one second, you want to now tell me that the machlokes between Abai and Rava is really going to center around ribis ketsutza. Now remember, just moments earlier in the Gemara did not like that, because the Gemara says that the issue of ribis ketsutza is not based on svara. It's not a svara-based machlokus. It's a machlokus based on how to interpret psukim in the Torah. But now at least the Gemara is trying to bring back and suggest that no, that maybe this issue of Rivas Ketsutza is going to be founded on the principles of svara, notably the svaras of Abai and Rava. The Gemara says that's a nice proposal, but it's not in fact true. How do I know that? The Amar Abaye, Hadein Damasik Bechavrei Arba Zuze Beribisa. Vayave Lelamalve, so the Gemara goes over the following case. The case that we're analyzing is the following. A lender charged a borrower interest. He should not have done that, obviously, but he did. And not only did he charge interest, but at the end of the loan, he says, you're going to be paying me the principal value of the loan, and you're going to be paying me the interest as well. And in terms of how much interest you're going to pay me, so we agreed that you're going to pay me 4 zuz. So you owe me 4 zuz of interest, okay? The borrower who agreed to paying the interest, so he gave the lender a coat. The coat was valued at 5 zuz. So not only did he pay interest, but compound interest. Well, I don't mean that literally, but in other words, but he paid more. They agreed to 4 zuz, and now he's giving him 5 zuz. So, kimav kinaminei. So now, Abaye says like this. Abaye starts with the assumption now that the borrower could take the lender to court, because you shouldn't have charged interest. And not only shouldn't you have done so, but we can go to court. So already you see the question, because you see clearly over here that Abaye says he take the person to court. So from Abaye's standpoint, by the way, I take it back just a little bit. For Abaye, there never was a problem, because Abaye always takes the position of Masha Asru Asri. But you'll see in just a moment how this presents a problem. So ki mafkina minei, da'ala mafkina minei, va'ayzuza ben matanu hu da'yahivlei. So Abaye says one note over here, and that is that now that you go to court, so how does the case sound? It's a very simple case. It's a pretty clear-cut case with one exception. In other words, the borrower is now accusing the lender of charging interest, and he did. And so the borrower says, look, I owed four zuzim in interest, and I gave him a coat valued at 5 zuzim. So now I want my interest back. So Abaye says, fine, he'll give you the interest back. The fact that the coat was worth 5 zuzim, so you don't get that 5th zuz back. Why? So Abaye says, I'm going to view that 5th zuz as a matana. You didn't owe the 5th zuz. You gave it on your own. That was volitional. So Abaye says, I'm going to view that 5th zuz as a matana. Rava amar chamisha mafkina minei. Now Rava says, no, that the borrower is entitled to all five zuzin. My time of kulabatosh rebisa ka'asi liyade. Because Rava says that, look, as far as the coat was given as the interest. And so therefore, even though it exceeded the amount of interest that was charged, but still, he gave the coat as interest, so therefore he's entitled to the fifth zuz as well. What do you see over here? Abaye and Rava are both in agreement that the interest is going to be returned back to the borrower. And they're both in agreement that the borrower could take the lender to court. The only point of contention between the two of them is only that fifth zuz. So you see over here that Abaye and Rava, you want to tell me they're arguing about Ribbis Katsutsa? They're not arguing about Ribbis Katsutsa. This case clearly illustrates that they're basically on the same page. And the only question is, what do we say about that fifth zuz? Is that part of the interest? Is that part of the matana? So Elaki Kamifli Abaye Rava Bishino Ikona. So the Gemara here in this variation, in this other version, says, you're right, Ribbis Katsutsa is not the machlokes between Abaye and Rava. What is the difference? Shinu Ikona. What does that mean? So go back to what I said just moments earlier. It either means that there really is no difference between Abaye and Rava, and it's just a question of how I'm going to answer up all the cases for Abaye and Rava respectively, or, like Rashi suggests, it could be that the only practical difference between them is going to be whether or not, if I steal an item and I make a change in the item, do I acquire the item? Do we say Shinu Ikona by Gzela? Wow. Okay, and that ends the discussion of Abaye and Rava. Kol Milsa Dama Rachmana I Avid Mahani or Lo Mahani. Okay, continuing now in the Gemara, we're on Vav Amud Beis. We are halfway down on the Amatana Rabbanan. The Gemara opens up with the following brisa: Kol Asher Bamum Lo Sakrivo. Now, remember earlier we said that if I take an animal which is a Bamum and I makdish the animal, so that is a violation of the Torah. That's an Isser Lav. It's a Lav. The Torah says Lo Sakrivo. Torah says don't offer it. Where do we see clearly that there's an issur to be makdish such an animal? So earlier I told you, coming up. Okay, and here it is. So the Braisa deals with this very question. If the Torah over here is prohibiting me from shechting such an animal as a karban, that the Torah already explicated. Elamata malomar bal takrivu bal takdishu. So the fact that this is now extra and quote-unquote unnecessary, of course it's not unnecessary, it's coming to tell me another halacha. Meaning not only don't shecht a baal mum as a karban, but don't even be makdish it as a karban. Mikan amru, ha-makdish baal mumim legabe mizbeach, over mishum chamisha shemos. A person who takes a blemish animal and consecrates it and ultimately offers it as a karban is now going to be subject to five separate isurim. Mishum, baal takrivu, baal takdishu. Number one, the baal takrivu, baal takdishu, which we just learned together, that you're forbidden from the Torah from consecrating it. Number two, Baal Tishkatu, you're now allowed to shecht it. Number three, Baal Tizriku, you're now allowed to sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach. Omishim Baal Taktiru, you're not allowed to offer any of it up onto the Mizbeach. Omishim Baal Taktiru Miksaso. And even offering just a portion of it on the Mizbeach, it too is going to be Nisr as well. Mishim Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Amar Af Kabbalah Sadam. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda adds a possible sixth Isser. Well, I say possible, meaning Tanakama doesn't subscribe to this. But he adds a sixth issur, and that is doing the act of kabbalas adam every time you shecht a karban. So you're receiving the blood in a bowl. That's part of the avodah. That's one of the dalat avodos. So that too, if I do it with an animal which is a baal mum, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, that constitutes a lav as well. What's the source of that?
The kayan.
That's right. That's going to be coming up in tomorrow's daf. Amar. So what Gemara now is going to do is just simply source every one of the halachas that we just learned together. Where exactly does the Torah say that you're not to shecht a baal mum? Meaning, earlier the Gemara says this was explicated in the Torah. Where was it explicated in the Torah? So the Gemara quotes the following. The pasuk says, "Averes or shavur charutz o yabelas lo sakrivu." So an animal with a blemish. And remember, back in Bechoros, we went and explained the various blemishes that are described in this pasuk. So under those circumstances, lo sakrivu, you're not to offer it. Mata malamrim bal takdishu arik varim lamala. So this must be a reference to Baal Tishkatu, meaning, basically, we have two separate psukim in the Torah, both telling us lo sakrivu. So what we're doing is we're basically assigning. One is telling us not to consecrate it, not to be makdish it. The other one's telling us not to shecht it. The parts that go on the fire, the imurim of a Baal Mum Karban, so that is not to go up onto the fire, and in doing so, one would be subject to the law. How do I know that even if I don't offer all the Imurim, but just a portion of the Imurim, Tamalomer, mayhem, even portions of it. Zrikas dami minayin tamalamar ala mizbech la Hashem. La rabu sira mishtaleach. The pasuk in terms of the isra zrikas dam, so it says ala mizbech. So al hamizbech, I'm sorry, I should have paused after the words al hamizbech. Al hamizbech, if I'm taking the blood and sprinkling it onto the mizbech, so that's also going to be a violation as well. The last word in this phrase of al hamizbech la Hashem l'rabu sira mishtaleach, that one is not allowed to offer a sira mishtaleach ba'mum. Now I say offer, by the way, you know I'm using the word loosely. I have to be using the word loosely. Sure. The sira mishtaleach is not offered on the mizbech, but on Yom Kippur, the sira mishtaleach is sent outside of the Azara and is thrown off the cliff. So Lashem l'rabasu. Now the Gemara says, now we're, well, I'm sorry, before I get to the next point of the Gemara. So what the Gemara is saying is that if our sir mishaleach is a bamum, so then one is going to be in violation of this lav as well. Okay. If you think about it for just a moment, you realize, wait, wait, 1 second. How do we get to the sir mishaleach being a bamum? Wonderful thought. The Gemara is going to clarify that in just a second. So Vatanya, the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, Lashem l'rabasu. You mean to tell me that when the Torah says the word La Hashem, that's a ribui? It's an inclusionary term. That's not true. V'atanyi, karban shomayani af kachi bedek abayish, nikru karban, kinyin shenemar, v'nakrivis karban Hashem, tamalomar, ve'el pesach ol moed. Haroi le pesach ol moed chayav mele mishum shchut echutz, she'en roi le pesach ol moed, ein chayav mishum shchut echutz. So, anything that is eligible to be brought in the Azara on the Mizbeach is going to also be eligible to the violation of Shchut Echot. So it has to be a carbon which at least has eligibility in the Azara, on the Mizbech. So Tamar Lamer LaHashem, Mishim Yuchadim LaHashem Yatsu Elu, She'en Yuchadim LaHashem. If I were to shecht the Seir Mishtalech outside of the Azara, obviously I shouldn't have done it. In other words, obviously the whole point is to send it off the cliff, but if I were to shecht it outside the Azara, one would not be subject to Shchut Echutz because it was not eligible to be brought on the Mizbeach. How do I know that we're including the Seir Mishtalech La Hashem? The La Hashem over here is serving as a miut. It's an exclusion. So the Gemara is obviously confused. Earlier we said La Hashem is a ribui. It's an inclusionary term. And now we're saying it's exclusionary. I'm a Rava. Hasa minyana dekra. So Rava will tell you, well, context. Meaning, La Hashem is doing something, it's accomplishing something, what it's coming to accomplish is going to be based on context. So, El Pesach, La Rabos, La Hashem, La Hotzi. If the El Pesach is coming as a ribui, the La Hashem over there is to work in the contrast and to be exclusive as an exclusionary term. Hachad Yishe, La Hotzi, La Hashem, La Rabos. And over here, we're talking Li Yishe regarding the Ba'amum that I'm offering up onto the Mizbeach, so the Hashem over there is coming to serve as an exclusion. Time to cast of Kral Hashem, who the Lamaisi Sir Mashalech, ha, La Rabbi Kral Hashem, have Amin Sir Mashalech Ba Mum Shapir Dami. Now, without the Drasha, let's think about what we're saying. Without a Drasha, we're entertaining the idea the Sir Mashalech can be a Ba Mum. How? How could it be a Ba Mum? So, Michti, Eina Goro Kavuela Bedavar Aroi. We know how the Sir Mashalech is selected through Goral, through lottery. On Yom Kippur, so two goats are presented to the Kohen Gadol, and through a lottery, simple lottery, two cards, two goats. One of them are going to be La Hashem, the other one's going to be La Zazel. But the halacha is very clear. Both of them have to be in a position where they're going to be eligible to be selected as the one that's going to be La Hashem. So how can we even get to the point of having a Sir Mishaleach Ba'amum, where I need now a drasha to tell me, well, the Sir Mishaleach Ba'amum, well, if I offered, I'm subject to a lav. Where did it ever come into being that it could be a Ba'amum? So I'm Rav Yosef, Hamani Chanan Hametzrihi Damar Afilu Dam Bekos Bevi Chaverim Zaveg Leg. So the Gemara over here brings us to the Gemara in Yuma and a major debate. What happens if I lose one of the goats? So if I lose one of the goats now and I need to select another goat, so is it done via lottery or can I just simply bring another goat? And so that's a major debate over there in the Gemara in Yuma. Chanan Hametzri is of the opinion I don't need to bring a new goat through lottery. I can just simply bring another goat. That's the position of Chanan Mitzri. So now that second goat, which I already have the Sir Lashem shechted and the blood's already been collected in a bowl. And still, if I lost the Sir Mishtaleach, I'll just replace it with another one. Good. So the Gemara says, okay, Nehi Deshamasle Lachanan Mitzri, Delo Havidichui, Delo Tzarech Agrala, Mishamet Lei, I'm sorry, Delo Tzarech Agrala, Mishamet Lei. So the Gemara says, you misunderstood Chanan Mitzri. All he's saying is that even though the Sir Lashem has been shechted, and the blood's been collected in a bowl, What he didn't mean, and this is what we thought he meant, is that I don't need to introduce the second goat via lottery. That's what we thought he meant. It's not true. All he's saying is there's no dichui, meaning I don't have the two goats side by side. The original goat selected Lashem is not alongside the other goat. The original goat Lashem has already been shechted. The blood's already been collected in a bowl. All he's saying is that we're not in the arena of dichui. We have not rejected the blood in the bowl. It's still good. We're going to have to select another goat. That has to be done via lottery. And then what's going to happen with the second goat? I direct you to the Gemara in Yuma, where the Gemara discusses that.
Bring two more goats.
You'll have to bring two more goats, and those two goats that you're going to have to bring are both going to have to be eligible. And neither of them obviously can be a Baal Mum. So Dilma Maisi Umagril. So the Ella Amr of Yosef Hamani Rabbi Shimonhi. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. So to work with the position of Chanan HaMitzri, that doesn't necessarily get us to the point of having the Steel Azazel being a blemished goat. How about the following? How about the position of Rabbi Shimon? The Tanya we learned on the Braisa, Meis Echad Mehem, Mevi Chaver Below Hagrala Diver Rabbi Shimon. So if one of them dies, so then the other one could be brought, even without a Hagrala. That's Rabbi Shimon's position. So you see that according to Rabbi Shimon, so the second goat can come without the Hagrala, which means then that in theory it could come from a Baal Mum. So therefore, at least according to the position of Rabbi Shimon, we can get to the point where now I need a drasha to exclude. So basically the whole drasha works only if I subscribe to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. Let's quickly recap our day. Today was the second day of the discussion of Abai and Rava, Kol Milsa D'Amar Rachman Lo Sa'avid, E Aved, whether Mahani or Lo Mahani. Rava says Lo Mahani, Abai says Mahani. The Gemara went through over a dozen different cases throughout Halacha where the Torah points us in different directions, whether it's Mahani or Lo Mahani. And what we did, the Gemara did, is say that for the cases that go in consonance with Rava good, the cases that go against Rava, Yotzei Min HaKlal, Torah says that this is an exception. Same thing with Abaye. All the cases that follow his position good, all the cases that don't, Yotzei Min HaKlal. And so that was the real avoda of the Gemara in terms of yesterday's daf and today's daf. Practical difference between Abaye and Rava, so unclear. The Gemara asks the question, what is the practical difference? The Gemara ends off with the very ambiguous phrase of Shinui Kona. Rashi offers two pshatim. Either it just simply means we're going to have to learn the psukim and learn the halachas differently if you're Abaye and Rava, but practically there is no difference. Rashi offers a second pshat, Shinui Kona, whether or not you can affect a Shinui in a stolen item and acquire the item. That could be the machlokes between Abaye and Rava. That is the difference. Although we learned there is another difference of Ribbis Kitsutsa, but the Gemara says, but that's not predicated on Abaye and Rava. That's actually predicated on Pesukim and Hadadarshan Pesukim. As long as we mention that you're not allowed to be Makdish Eba Mum, and the Gemara earlier described that as a lav, so we spent the rest of the daf today explicating the Pesukim, how we know that's a lav, and so we've gone through a lengthy brisa and a lengthy discussion in the Gemara just simply to establish the fact that being Makdish Eba Mum is in fact a lav.